does inflation matter to the Fed? Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Real Vision Daily Briefing. With me today is Jem Carson, founder of Kai Volatility. Hey, Jem, it's great to see you.
Good to be back.
So we had a stronger than expected reading on PPI, and there was a time this would have rocked markets, but you know, bond yields are up, stocks were down. They were up initially, but then they fell. But we have monthly options expirations happening tomorrow. We have the Fed next week. So there's a lot going on. What are you watching in the short term here?
Well, I mean, look, PPI, this is actually, you know, number go down on bad PPI actually is about a random number indicator. I mean, we got CPI and the market was up 60 points, right?
Yeah.
The reality is the last five of the last six numbers have been not just hot, but very hot for inflation, whether it's unemployment, CPI, PPI, pick your number. I've been saying for 2 months, you know, transitory 3.0, right? Like let's talk about how inflation has gone again for like the third year in a row. And then let's all, you know, step back and actually start thinking about why. And it's that populism that you're referring to, and it's structural inflation. It's not about cyclical. It's not two dimensions. We talk about this every time. It's structural inflation. Cyclically, we're slowing down. What does that mean? Stagflation. I've been saying it for, you know, a year and a half, 2 years. Stagflation. Here we go. Fed is in a box, right? That's what matters here. The Fed is in a box. But what matters in the context of a box is if you have two choices and you don't know what to do, it's what you decide to do that matters. Mm. And what has the Fed decided to do since December? Ignore the inflation. Say, I can be Volcker or I can be Burns. And they're being Burns. It's very clear.
They said they want to be Volcker, though. He said that so many times.
Of course, the narrative is one way. But this just proves that that Volcker thing was just narrative. You can't say I'm going to be Volcker and try and talk the market into it, right? Which is what they're trying to do. And then go say we're going to cut 3 to 4 to 5 times, right? And so since December, it's been very clear in the face of 5 out of 6 numbers being incredibly hot, what's the response been? We're maybe going to do cut less, right? Like, okay. All right. So what does that mean for markets? That means, you know, green light, like here comes, you know, inflation. We're okay with all inflation. Here comes the liquidity. That means we're inflating everything. And that won't be pretty in the long run. That means a steepening in the yield curve, which we have talked about again for several months now, you and I. That means the short end of the curve is going to start coming down because they're going to cut, right? But that does not mean the long end of the curve is coming down. That means it's steepening. And we have not seen a cutting cycle like this with a steepener in decades, call it 40 years. That is really confusing. And what that tells me is that as we've been expecting, that eventually the Fed is going to lose control of the long end of the curve. That is the big problem that eventually happens. We're not there yet. We're not months away. We're not quarters away. But we are within years of that happening. When that starts to happen, that is an accelerant to inflation. When inflation expectations creep up at the long end of the curve, we know this from history. Mm. That's the worst thing that can possibly happen for inflation itself. It's a circular reaction function. So that's what we're thinking about. You know, why is the liquidity, you know, there's all this talk about issuance, right? We've been talking about this for some time and how that's going to pull down the market. Why has that not? If you go look at liquidity, we're only issuing 1.5% of GDP when the deficit is 6% per year. So how are we doing that? You know, that's at the long end of the curve. We're issuing at the short end of the curve, and we're playing all kinds of games at the short end of the curve to absorb liquidity, whether it's pulling from reverse repo, changing Basel requirements, you know, all the things that the Fed does, to create facilities to keep the liquidity flowing in the context of a need for more issuance. It'll eventually be a problem, but in the short term, it doesn't matter. So there's all kinds of reasons why liquidity is not being removed from the system, and the Fed is willing to step in and stimulate at this point. Now, the real question is why? Why is the Fed doing that? And it's because it's an election year, right? It's because it's an election. We can dive more into that, but right now the green light is on, and this is, in our opinion, the beginning of the end. So, you know, this is the blow off top and the liquidity coming and the squeeze that will eventually, you know, and so
you know, the beginning of the end. So what kind of time frame? Because that's super important, right? And I think you're really giving voice to so many people we've had on, and I was trying to figure out a way to articulate this. There's a sense of concern, especially when we're talking about tech stocks, for example. There's a sense of concern, but everybody, especially if they have any shorter term trader type perspective, will be like, listen, you can't argue with this momentum. Like, it's very hard to argue with the momentum we're seeing, even though we feel so uneasy about it. So if we're in that phase where you are getting this, you know, risk on liquidity because of what the Fed's doing, how long does that last? It's a blow off top that seems short, but I don't know. What kind of time frame should we be thinking about with that?
So everybody wants to know when we go down, when we go up, right? The answer yes, you don't have to play that game. It is a foolish game to play. The game is to play the distribution, is to play what are the higher likelihood events in this type of a scenario. And the higher probability, as we've been saying, is the tails get fatter, and particularly the right tail upside vol is too cheap and vol starts increasing well before we get a eventual big decline. It happens every time. And we're talking about a big structural decline, not a 1 day, 1 week, 1 month decline. That's not what we're talking about. And when we're talking about the year over year declines, the bigger ones, you see it before it's coming and the market reacts before it's coming. Mm. Blow off tops happen for a reason. They happen because at the end of the day, people are short for a reason. People start saying, I'm not going to be long this market anymore. I'm going to take some off the table. I'm going to write calls over my positions because I don't think it can go any higher. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. And when the market starts going higher, that creates more people that have to buy back their shorts or buy back in because they're not following the indexes to the extent they should. And that forces convexity to the upside. It's forced buying. Mm. And forced buying and getting those people back in and saying, I give up. Enough is enough is ultimately what leads to the end, right? That's how the machine works. You cannot get a decline when everybody expects it. It needs to be hard. And it becomes increasingly hard to take a short bet when vol goes higher as well. Because the higher vol goes, the more difficult it is to hedge. And the harder it is to hedge, the more markets move and the more volatility there is. It's reflexive. So market up, vol up is the most likely scenario. And that also unpins more and more vol as we increase. We've been talking about it for 3 months. We've seen a secular increase to it. This is just the beginning. Usually it's a year at least of this. We will continue to see more of this. That is the way to play it. Long dated calls, short stock, net long deltas, play the convexity.
Mm. So we have a question from Doug. Is this why gold remains stubbornly high?
Yes. If you look at 68 to 82, 14-year period, markets went nowhere. We've covered this quite a bit. The best performing asset by far is gold. Why gold? It's not just because it's an inflation hedge. It's also a currency hedge, right? It is a hedge against the risk of not knowing where is safe. And why are these things connected? Why are these two things connected? Well, not just because of the debasement of currency and those thoughts, which is what most people think. It's because populist periods of inflation are periods of deglobalization, are periods of global strife, of war, for lack of a better term, economic war, hot wars, cold wars, you name it, right? Commodity wars, right? All of these things are entities saying, okay, my people, my populace matters, not corporations and profits. My populace matters. And when you start doing that, it's a competition. It's not a collaboration. It's a competition game. And we are amidst a massive competition game that's just getting started. What happened in the last competition? The Vietnam War, the increase of the Cold War, OPEC crises. We can go on and on, right? That's the type of world we're in. It rhymes with what we're seeing now, and it will only continue. Periods of protectionism, periods of entities flexing their muscles in any way they can. And at the end of the day, what does that mean? That means people doubt the dollar. They doubt, but they have no other choice. And currency, hard currencies are in vogue during that time. This is why Bitcoin, has also, in my opinion, done well. It's a safe harbor for people, particularly outside of the developed world, to move assets and protect them in a deglobalized world. Now, does that mean, I know kind of general opinions here, but does that mean that's a long-term buy? Well, if decades a long-term, then yes. If it's a 20, 30-year buy, you know, there's other questions, to ask yourself. But
yeah, we have seen that. So it's interesting you're thinking about, because I think the question was, about traditional gold, but you're seeing this move in both of those, because some people would say maybe call them digital gold, a version of digital gold. You see this move as being driven by this uncertainty, this concern that people have, this populism.
Yeah, Bitcoin is millennial gold, right? It is. And what I mean by that is gold has no intrinsic value, really. It's not useful. It's just because people deem it to be a currency and a hold of value. It has value. It goes up because people feel like it's a hold of value. Mm-hmm. It is a narrative story at its core, right? You have to have people's belief in something. If without that belief, Bitcoin is actually worthless, right? Mm. It has belief because people believe it is worth a hold of soul. And millennials are the primary beneficiaries. They're growing into political dominance. They're the primary beneficiary of a lot of the political populism, and the things are the driver and the beneficiary. And will continue to also inherit the wave of money. And so they are, you know, if you're looking for money flows into something, that's a pretty good place to be, right? Ask yourself, what are millennials, what do they want? And what are they going to get in the next 10, 15 years as a function of this populism? And buy that. There's lots of things. Cheaper housing, it can go on and on about what they want.
Yeah. And we know what they're worried about, which is debt. So Jim, you just sort of gave an overview of the series we're doing right now, which is How to Unfuck Your Future, because there is a lot of discontent happening. People do feel like they're screwed. They're very worried about the levels of debt and the sort of vacuum of anyone doing anything about it. And then there are all these people coming up with opportunities or solutions, or how do you best prepare yourself for these really uncertain times? So I want to play a clip from a conversation that Ash had with Charles Hoskinson, the co-founder of Cardano, at the very beginning. It's part of the series. It was last week, but we're counting it as part of the series. And he's talking about this sort of feeling around inflation and some of what you were just referencing. Let's have a listen and we'll talk on the other side.
Good news and bad news. First, the bad news. Mint is shutting down. The good news? There's an even better alternative. Many Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, cash flow, net worth, and more. Plus, create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all of your tags and categories. It's the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving the product. They release updates every 2 weeks and allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. After reading the reviews, I can see why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. That's monarchmoney.com/vision for your extended 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/vision.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on The Real Vision Daily Briefing.
Good news and bad news. First, the bad news. Mint is shutting down. The good news? There's an even better alternative. Many Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it. Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all of your accounts, investments, transactions, cash flow, net worth, and more. Plus, create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, and collaborate with your partner. And now listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. Monarch has a tool that allows you to easily import your data from Mint and keep all of your tags and categories. It's the most customizable budgeting app. Change the layout of your dashboard, toggle between light and dark mode, create custom budgets and notifications, set up automatic rules for transactions and notifications, and more. Monarch is obsessed with constantly improving the product. They release updates every 2 weeks and allow customers to submit suggestions, vote on requested features, and view the product roadmap. After reading the reviews, I can see why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/vision. That's monarchmoney.com/vision for your extended 30-day free trial. Go to monarchmoney.com/vision.
You know, I always go back to The Simpsons. It's the most prescient show of all time. The real mindfuck of The Simpsons is that was a show started, I think it was 1988. Homer Simpson is an uneducated blue-collar worker, and he owns a home with 4 bedrooms, 2 cars. His wife stays at home, and he can afford 3 kids. Think about that. That's the real mind of that show. And that was commonplace in 1988. We all just, nobody looked at that like, what the heck is going on? And then you look at today, can you have that kind of lifestyle on a blue-collar salary? No, that's inflation. As for the real rate of inflation, they rig the numbers. They say it's 5%, but let's cut oil out of that. Let's cut meat and poultry out of that. Let's take all the things you actually need in life. My brother lives in Gillette, Wyoming. He does a lot of real estate transactions. We would see trailers and modular homes go for $50,000, $75,000. Those same properties in Gillette are selling for $180,000 5 years later from $50,000. And they tell me the inflation rate's only 5%. It's not a real number. Everybody is seeing it. They're feeling it real time, and wages are not going up. So they feel it. They say, I'm done. I need something else. Where do I go? And that's what creates a revolution. And that revolution's a monetary revolution. And people are going to flee into cryptocurrency, and they're not going to go for half measures. They're not going to go into cryptocurrencies. The only thing that they offer is digital gold, because they can't vote with it. They can't bank with it. They can't have financial services with it. They're going to go for a full stack thing where they actually feel like they have a stay. And that's why I think the third generation is so important. And all cryptocurrencies, whether it be Tezos or Algorand or Cardano that are pursuing that, they're going to fare very well, you know, when that transition occurs.
I love the reference of The Simpsons. I know some of you in crypto world will have your thoughts about what he's saying about Bitcoin, ETH versus Cardano. We'll put that aside for 1 second. But Jim, I think he sort of tapped into the same exact thing you're talking about. Dee and Jacob Shapiro talked about in the beginning of the week with us, and it's kind of been threading throughout. How are you thinking about this populism as we head into not just an election here in the U.S., but there are like 50 elections around the world. It's an incredibly important year, 2024, in terms of voters just heading to the booth.
We have a very different perspective than others. I've seen a lot of stats come across recently. People like election years, it's overdone, blah, blah, blah. People are missing the point. They're missing the point. If you take elections 1928 all the way through 2020, right? All the data, 24 years of elections, the average returns are 11.5%. Okay. So yeah, 3%, 3.5% more better than average. Sounds pretty desirable. 83% positive. But what people don't realize is it's very concentrated, and not just randomly concentrated. 1964, 1968, 1972, 1976, 1980, what do those years have in common? Those are 5 of those 24 years. What do those years have in common? The last period of inflation and populism, right? Mm-hmm. If you take those 5 elections, the average performance, and they're back-to-back elections, the average nominal performance was 21%. Every single year was positive double digits, 11% or higher for 5 years in a row. And we've talked about this. 1968 to 82, the market went nowhere for 14 years in nominal terms. So if you look at the 5 that are in that window, the 4 that are in that window, and you remove them, all the other 10 years of that 14-year cycle were negative 9% on average. 10 out of the 14 years in nominal terms, in real terms, down 20% on average per year during that cycle. Yet all the election years were positive double digits. That's not a coincidence. That's what happens on populist years. And guess what? The first populist election we had, 2020, what was the performance in 2020? 21%. These things are not a coincidence. Every single populist election is double digits, massively positive. And why is that? I didn't just look at these data and make up this thesis. I actually went to go look at the data because I was like, wow, it's a populist election. Those must be much more positive than regular elections. Let's go look at the data. Sure enough, when there's populism, there's spending and liquidity is coming to the head, what happens? Markets go up, number go up. It's not a surprise, right? It makes sense. And it's 100% positive. I know that's not a lot of data, but it's double digits. It's speaking loud and clear. By the way, if you take those six populist elections out of the 24 years, how do the other 18 years look? How do all other elections outside of populist elections look? Positive 5%. Well below the average performance. So it's not about elections writ large. This whole election year stuff misses the point. Not all elections are the same. It's populist elections. It's when, you know, it doesn't matter if you're left or right. We're spending. Here we go. We want spending. We're gonna stimulate. That matters. And on top of that, guess what? Populist years aren't just more spending. They're contested elections. 64, 68, 72, 76, 1980, 2020. Every single one was a contested election. And we're used to incumbents winning. Guess what? Only one of those incumbent won. And guess what? That was Nixon. And he got kicked out of office because it's a populist period and people aren't happy. People want change. And so that's what happens during populism, contested elections, serious confrontation, global deglobalization, more spending to try and get votes, competitive on both sides. And that means markets go up. But in the context of those periods, just to be clear, those are eras that are very bad for markets. It's just very positive in the context of a very negative thing. We're spending, we're getting ourselves into a bigger hole. We have bigger problems. It's okay for the market. Here comes the blow off top, but be prepared on the other side of it. I think that's very important. People are missing that picture.
I think that's so interesting. That's so important because it's not just about knowing that now, it's that preparation on the other side that I frankly, you know, would worry about. So we have some questions coming in. Which one to ask first? They're all so good. Okay. So, Mark is asking, you reference distribution as a strategy. Considering gold and Bitcoin narratives, what's your all-weather portfolio?
Your pet is one of a kind, and so is their journey. While every playful moment is a memory in the making, sometimes our cats and dogs are a little too good at getting into trouble. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help get your pet the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
We're going to take another quick break to hear a word from our partners. We'll be right back with more of the day's top analysis on the Real Vision Daily Briefing.
I have two dogs, B and G, and we call them the Beastie Girls. They are so naughty, so mischievous, but we absolutely adore them. They complete our family, and we just can't imagine our home without them. And I'm sure a lot of you feel the same. Your pet is a one of a kind, and so is their journey. While every playful moment is a memory in the making, sometimes our cats and dogs are a little too good at getting into trouble. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 6,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/realvision. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Well, an all-weather portfolio is diversified. So it says, I'm never going to tell you all in Bitcoin, all in gold, or gold and Bitcoin. Like, that's just irresponsible, and you're not benefiting from the benefits of diversification. The key here, and we actually do wealth advisory for bigger clients. So we have a all-weather portfolio that we follow. What does that generally look like? We, instead of just buying bonds, because we believe duration is a problem during periods like this, we do T-bills, but we do what's called yield stacking. We benefit from this idea that derivatives, which we didn't have the benefit of in the 1960s and 70s, are capital efficient. They were created for efficiency of capital first and foremost. And so you can use derivatives, take the T-bill rate, which is 5.5%, and then stack that the yield on that collateral, very low leverage, very low risk ways of getting from 5.5% to 8%. Non-correlated, not tied to markets. Why bother? Take a bond alternative that's much more stable, that doesn't have problems with duration. We think about a third of your portfolio should be in those types of products. After that, we think that you should be focused on thematic equities. What do I mean by thematic equities? What wins during these periods? These inflationary populist periods, the market does poorly, but the economy actually, we've talked about this, grows above trend. GDP growth will be quite strong because we're in a demand push economy. So the economy does okay, but the problem is profit margins get compressed. So you have to be in the things that don't get compressed on the profit margin side and benefit from where the flows are coming. What are those things? Yes, commodities. Commodities businesses do quite well. What else does well? The places where government spending, it takes hold. Global, you know, defense, healthcare, infrastructure, right? Sit at the mouth of the fountain. Where's the liquidity coming from? Government. Where do you want to be? By government, where the liquidity is coming from, right? If you want hot water and you're at the spa, go to the mouth of the hot water in the water. Don't go sit there trying to bet on beta. Beta is not the story. Beta will not perform, but bet on the economy. Guess what? The Warren Buffett value, you know, DCF model way of investing, it's going to work again. It's almost like people have sworn it off. We've been talking about this for years. Guess what? Berkshire is at an all-time high again. It's not a surprise. That's the stuff that will matter. It's real cash flow. Money is expensive during these periods, and you want to be in a place of strength where you're not worried about reinvestment. So thematic equities can do very well. This is a time of rebalancing and shifting, right? We know energy, for example, is about 3%, 3.5% of the S&P 500. It was over 30% in 1982 at the end of that cycle. So relative appreciation is very important during these periods. So we think about 40% of your portfolio should be in thematic equities, and the others should be in alternatives. There's all kinds of alternative strategies. Ours would be one, like hedge fund strategies, that have nothing to do with the market and actually benefit from times of less liquidity, because people can compete less, and the power of derivatives allows for more efficiency. Lots of big hedge funds were born during this environment. People lost interest in hedge funds because they could get 10% on average per year, close their eyes, and just make money on beta. Why create value? Why pay the fees? Why do anything? Well, that 5% alpha, which was non-correlated, all of a sudden matters again. And that's really important. So non-correlated investments. Sounds hard, almost impossible. Everybody's been taught that 60-40 is the only way to invest. Why? Because it was cheap and easy and people didn't need to know anything. Every wealth advisor on the street could create a planning model, take it to you and say, go from 70-30 to 50-50.
There's no alpha, you get your 401.
That just needs market go up. And that's what happens if interest rates go down. But if interest rates go up, those both get hurt. 60 gets hurt and the 40 gets hurt. So non-correlated investments, sorry to go on a bit of a tirade, but
no,
there is an approach. There is a way to do this. And that's how to un-F your life if you want to know from our perspective.
I love it. This is what you never hear, right? Because a lot of it is marketing that we're listening to and not really information, and certainly not information coming from someone with as much experience as you. So we appreciate you telling it like it is, Jim. We have another question about, this was from a little earlier, but just to reset on Bitcoin and Ether, maybe put it this way. Frank is saying, do you view Bitcoin as an extension of the tech trade, or do you think it's uncorrelated?
I think it is both tied to the tech trade and tied to inflation. And I think the reason being is because the generation that is buying it and interested in driving it is both a believer in the tech trade and a believer in the, you know, hedging inflation and the problems with our current system. So both of those things are things that are going to be a focus for the next 15 years. And because the buyers of it believe that is so, it will be so. My view is structurally, there's no specific, connection to tech or to inflation. It has a connection because people believe it does. And those people will have more money and will be the core political force in the economy. And as long as that's the case, I expect that it will do well for both reasons.
We got a lot of, I think we answered some of the questions that we already asked, but let's just maybe go back to short-term, some short-term flows that you're looking at here, since we've been talking bigger picture, and what should people be cognizant of as we sort of make our way through what are going to be the expirations, but also the Fed next week?
Yeah. So March OPEX, right? Big quarterly OPEX. 4 times a year they happen. This one you can wipe off the board because it's at the end of the year and tied up to much bigger flows that are end of year, beginning of year, which we've talked about. You really have 3 what I'd call dangerous quarterly expirations. And why are they dangerous? Because there's big open interest. There's more risk when you have big open interest because bigger, the distribution is wider and a little bit kind of twisted, right? And that fat left tail is out there for if markets do decline, it can accelerate. So it is a big OPEX. We talked about how entering that OPEX is the most dangerous period, though, right? When we were entering on Feb 14th, that was the week that you need to be careful. And if things didn't start falling apart, then the buyback of stock during this OPEX for those Vana and Charm flows we talk about will be very, very strong and supportive. And that's what we've seen, right? But we were also clear come Wednesday. And by the way, that's regardless. Like when CPI came out, I didn't care that it was negative. Actually, that was a buyable dip because we knew the flows, the big flows were coming. That's why CPI didn't matter. Nobody talks about that on CNBC or anywhere else. It, you know, they just kind of, when days like today, it's about PPI. But what happened during CPI? We're just going to mumble through that one and figure it out, right? So CPI didn't matter for the markets, but PPI apparently does. It's crazy, right? But the point is that there are flows, there are big structural flows that matter. And guess what? As of Wednesday, they're mostly done. And what does that mean? Mean reversion. And the macro picture comes back into focus. That stuff matters again. So we have now run, you know, about 30% off the bottom in just November 1st, right? It is a big run and it has been consistent. And it speaks, by the way, these thrusts speak to the liquidity we're talking about, and what the Fed's telling you, and what happens during election years, and what's likely to happen. All of that, you know, I'm not saying that stuff isn't important, but we have to think shorter timeframes as well. And in the context of this, things don't go in a straight line. And if and when you're going to get that digestion of some kind, which can be a digestion, by the way, in price or time, right? You want to be prepared to buy back in. Question is, are we about to get a bit of digestion? And I would say yes. So cyclically, those positive flows that have been holding things up are getting pulled off the table. They're no longer dominant here. And in the context of that, we're getting continuing to get hot inflation numbers, and we're about to get a Fed. the Fed conversation. So yeah, this is a time to be cautious and don't wait and watch. Time is on your side. Eventually, we want to buy back into this. The question is that in 2 weeks? Is that in 3%, 5%, 8%, 10%? But it's a function of price and time, and it's a function of what's happening to vol. Our bet is that this will be a market down, vol down event in the front of the curve, much like the opposite we've been seeing, which we've been talking about for a while, market up, vol up. So that said, it's not just a broad decline in vol across the board. I think that's important. What we've seen through now almost 3 months, 2.5 months of market up, vol up, is that the back end of the curve, meaning 2 months and further out, has become very undersupplied of vol. We haven't seen that in years. People have been asking me, when is this vol supply going to decline? When are we going to stop getting all the vol compression? It's actually starting to happen in the back end of the curve. That continues to go higher because dealers have been taken out of it. And if you have that for 2.5 months, consistent buying or needing to buy back, it creates a loop. And now people are short and trying to get it back. Meanwhile, they're getting supply of vol in the front of the curve. They're getting that. Why? Structurally, as March decays out, which was high, you get things that are immediately behind it, a week or two behind it, that are cheap. So gamma has gotten relatively cheap, but longer term vol is undersupplied. And that longer end supply undersupply can start to loop. So likely into the decline, we're likely to see a expansion of calendars into this decline. Longer term vol continue to stay relatively bid, short term vol compressing, what we call a skew swap. So puts in the backs actually staying relatively firm. Skew's actually been pretty cheap. Vol's relatively cheap back there. But the shorter end stuff, because the move's not fast enough, really getting compressed and not getting you a hedge. So I think that's probably the next move, a little bit inside baseball there. But we're talking skew swaps and calendar expansion. But the reality here is the next decline should be not a massive vol event, not some huge 20% decline. It should be a digestion, and we're looking for an opportunity of how and when to get into that. And that's, in our opinion, somewhere between 3% and 10%. I know that's a wide range, and a function of sometime in the next 2 to 2.5 weeks, you want to be back in and aggressively playing market up, fall up again, long dated calls will be the next one.
Amazing stuff. Jen, this was so great. What a perfect time to have you on, not only for the expirations and all that great stuff, but talking about some of the longer term things that we don't always get time for. Especially while we're doing this series. So we love it and appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Always good to be here. Thanks for giving me the forum.
And we've got another bunch of great episodes coming up for that. So check the platform, check the website to figure out how to see them, sign up for them. And we've got some workshops that I think you're going to find out about in a minute. We're going to play some more information, but keep an eye on that because they're going to be first come, first serve. So we'll tell you a lot more about that tomorrow. But thanks, everybody. Take care and good luck out there.
One of the most popular Real Vision series ever is back. How to Unfuck Your Future will explore the problems we're currently facing and, more importantly, present solutions. We've got an incredible roster of guests, including Raul Pell, Dario Perkins, Beth Kindig, and Denise Scholl. We'll be digging into the crucial topics, including how AI is going to impact election year politics, the problems with central banks, the global housing crisis, and a lot more. You'll get in-depth, long-form analysis from real experts on the stuff that's really happening. And best of all, you'll get access to the entire series for just $1, which is kind of insane. Go to realvision.com/your future. That's realvision.com/your future. And join us for what's going to be an epic 2 weeks of learning and discovery.